we're not separated from some of our other guys.
Mm-hmm.
This is Herb Dyckman and, this is Herb, I think that backwards, Erwin Sainsbud and Bert Miller. And
those guys were all in the photographic unit?
No, I was the only one that photographed.
Okay.
They were in the 35th Transport Command there. And
I like this
picture.
And
this is Bill Three Irons, and he had his birthday. And this is down in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And they called him the chief.
Okay, let's see, where were we at here? Okay, talking about the pictures, do you feel that your photographs are priceless?
I guess I'm so familiar with pictures, I don't ever put a price on them.
Telling the story of the war,
As far as the war is concerned, there's a lot of these. In fact, it may sound odd, but up 2 or 3 years ago, some bright young guy in Washington, D.C. decided to take a lot of the photographs and were like, they're mm-hmm. occupying space in a warehouse, they're no good, and they threw them out.
Oh my.
And what they threw out, I don't really know, but I'm like, but these here were in the news today is about the Pope.
Right.
And in Manila, just imagine the street coming down here and be the Santa Mesa Boulevard.
Mm-hmm.
It comes into town, and then on the first buildings on your right is the San Miguel Prison, which was notorious. That the Japanese used and
right.
the Japanese, and it was actually built by the Spanish. And as you look here at this, back over here,
mm-hmm.
close to the bay, is the old Spanish fort.
Really?
And they have 20 or 25 foot high walls, smooth granite, and alike that they built it out of. And some of the Japanese were in that, and then on down there's the Treasury Building, and back over here was the City Hall.
Mm-hmm.
And just like a big spire of a building, 150, 175 feet, and the Japanese had put machine gun nests all the way up on these things. And our guys stood back with 105s, 155s, and they blasted holes through 4 feet of reinforced concrete at different places along there.
Wow.
And so a lot of these were that way. And I wonder, I didn't mention it once before, I was talking to Dr. Rush, but there were, walking down Harrison Boulevard to where 35th Transport Command had their tents, they're just stairways. Every mm-hmm. so often, here's the steps. And evidently, those were big houses in there at one time. They had maybe four families or so to a house. And they were burnt down when the Japanese went in.
Wow.
And I like it. One of the things that I think the worst part of the whole war in the Pacific was when they went in on the Bataan.
Mm-hmm.
The Bataan Peninsula, that's where the Japanese Kanawha guys, and the name of the island. But at any rate, on this island was the corregidor, was palm trees.
Okay.
And the Japanese had a bunch of guys over there, and we had built up big tunnels and so forth for ammunition and everything, and fortified it a lot back in the 20s and 30s. And these pine trees, palm trees, were quite thick, and they bombed straight, and Navy ships pounded it for 3 or 4 days or a week or however long it was. Mm-hmm. And those trees were broken off at the ground, some halfway up, some just the tops up. Only the only place that paratroopers were used.
Really?
And we had Cordy Gutzheimer, and I just can't come up with the other photographer, but they had taken parachute training so they could jump with the paratroopers.
Mm-hmm.
And they took pictures on there. Some of the paratroopers, the parachutes were up here a real 60 feet, 75 feet above the ground in a palm tree.
Wow.
Others were in down below and alike, and it was the biggest mess.
Oh, I can imagine.
And old Shorty Gutzheimer, he was about 5'6", whenever he got drunk, there wasn't a 6'6", 200-pound man that he couldn't beat to a pulp.
Wow.
And when he came off of Corregidor, he was gentle as a lamb.
Really?
That was really quite impressive on him. That was, and that was sort of the most destruction that we had ever saw.
Okay. I have a couple questions. Which country that you were in was most different from home here in Montana?
Oh, well, all of them. Australia was much different. The New Guinea was much different. And the Philippines were different.
Mm-hmm.
One thing... When I was a child, we'd see picture movies of the little thatch huts and the like,
right.
And everybody thought, boy, what a cheap house of a bad and so forth. They weren't considered as being livable.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there in the Philippines, close to Montalupa, I was privileged to go into one of those.
Mm-hmm.
And they were about 5 feet up in the air, and their steps were just logs, 3-inch logs,
really?
A stop, and you just step from one to the other. But once you got inside of there, the roof came down past the windows.
Mm-hmm.
So outside, you wouldn't even realize there's windows. The floor was bamboo strips about 1 inch wide, separated by about 3/16 of an inch.
Wow.
And they were, there's nothing in this room that was as highly polished
really?
As that. There wasn't a speck of dust anywhere, and that was the coolest building I ever said down there.
Wow.
And so thatch touches and like that. And in Australia, there, Camp Ruka, I never liked to be tied down, but it's quite an area. And I was walking around one day, and I come up to this clump of little twigs and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So it must have been 20 feet high and maybe 100 feet in diameter. That was an anthill.
Really? Amazing.
So they have a tremendously amount of ants and all sizes.
This is a more personal question. How do you feel about being part of what's being called now the greatest generation?
I guess I never thought of myself as being the greatest generation. But people of my age did do the impossible. And thousands, hundreds of thousands of them died because of it. And not one of them ever regretted a lot of it. Now, there at Hardin, we had two guys that were, both had lost a leg in World War II. One, he had an artificial leg, but he never used it. He got around with crutches and a wheelchair. Mm-hmm. The other boy, he had an artificial leg. He delivered freight from a freight truck.
Lovely.
So he was very active, mm-hmm. and so forth, and it just took the individual. What have I got left? And they worked with it.
Great. That's amazing. And why do you think it's taken so long for World War II veterans to gain recognition? I mean, just a few years ago, they finally got the World War II Memorial put up. Do you have any thoughts on that?
You know, I think that the most of the guys just, they want to put that behind them.
Really?
Now, it may sound odd. My wife was secretary at the Methodist Church, and mm-hmm. she had letters she had to mail off. We had to pull them together and put a naming label on them, mm-hmm. and so forth. And the other fellow over there with me, about my age, and he's quite, not as strong, or he doesn't get around me. I act like I'm 10 years old.
Mm-hmm.
But he is was that way. And he was in England. I was talking to him about it. Asked him, did you ever want to come up here and tell about your story? And he evidently was in the medics or something like that. But at any rate, on D-Day, they were getting ready to go across, and here come, they stopped them, because here come boats back with wounded and dead and so forth on them. And he doesn't want to tell anybody what he
really
went through and what he saw. And he was just on the receiving
mm-hmm.
end of the men that were wounded and killed and so forth. And so many of them, they just want to put it behind them.
Right.
My brother-in-law, Chet Scott, he was in the Marines, and he was in a, he's a dry cleaner, and they put him in the laundry business
mm-hmm.
For the Marines. And he was on Guadalcanal pretty much after it was all taken care of. And then he was in on the landing at Palau. I would never ask any of these soldiers if what they did or what they happened and so forth. And Chuck would never talk about it.
Really?
And I would never ask. Brad Spear, down at Hardin, he's a lawyer. He had an office right across from the mortuary. And I was talking with Brad one day, and he was in on Palau. And all he would say about it was a bloody mess.
Mm-hmm.
The Japanese probably had 15,000 to 25,000 men on these islands.
Mm-hmm.
And they literally wiped them all out. They killed every last one of them. Very, very few did they ever take prisoners. But in turn, the soldiers, like on Iwo Jima right here, this fellow mm-hmm. says they lost 7,000.
Mm-hmm. So much.
And at the time, the people here at home, they knew that they were tens of thousands that never came home. And they just, the ones that were there, really in the fighting, they did not want to talk about it. Now, I was so far behind the line. I was in a different way, different manner, in the line. give you an example. We, our photo lab people, we ate up on, went up the Fallen Neck Highway up to MacArthur's headquarters on top of the hill overlooking Cyclops Airfield. And we looked over and here's a whole bunch that looked like fighter planes down there. And I was with one of our photographers one day, and I said, why don't we drive over there and see what kind of planes those were? They're all B-17s.
Wow.
They're American planes. They're a great big thing.
Mm-hmm.
But we were
so far
probably
away.
5 miles away from them, or at least, and the like. And here's a little fact that I knew about before I ever got in the Army.
Mm-hmm.
How they built their airports. Well, my dad was selling steel burial vaults, and he couldn't get them. And one day the salesman came through and said they're making big pieces for that all fit together for the airfields over during the war. And we went over there and we drove on those things. And we stopped and looked. Well, Cyclops Air Force area hadn't been used for 6 to 10 months. And it was just laid on, these steel mats were just laid on dirt. There weren't any oil or anything. They would roll it down to make it solid. And they laid these things down. And they're probably 2 miles long and maybe quarter of a mile wide, some places even wider where they park the planes. But the grass, kunai grass they call it, was worn 5 feet high.
Wow.
So, when you went down to the next airport to Hollandia Air Force Base, it was used a lot, and they kept the grass down, and you can see the steel mat there. It rattled like all get out when the planes took off and landed, but it was safe and alive. So.
Let's see here. You've covered so much. Really specific stuff, which is great. Where were you when you heard the news that the war was over?
Well, I was there in Manila, and it was in the afternoon that we heard the war was over. And one of our photographers came back, and he said, guys were running 6x6 trucks, two big trucks, and shooting rifles and pistols out the window. And I was in what we call the National Development area. So they had a warehouse that an office building that we took over. And I said to myself, I'm not going down there and get killed.
Right.
I'm staying here. So I stayed there in the camp in our area, just off of Santa Mesa Boulevard. There in the Philippines, our lab was in a building that the, what is known as San Paquita movie studio, their office building. The San Paquita is the national flower of the Philippines. And they would get the blossoms and make a necklace out of them. And at night people would put them on and they were supposed to keep the mosquitoes in.
Really? Interesting. How did you feel about going home?
Well, I was relieved that we're finally going home.
And you spent how long, how many months in the military?
In the military, about 33 months.
Okay. And
how long? From May 12th to 43 to, well, December 23rd, 45.
Okay.
I was going to say something else there. But it took us about 24 days or something like that to come back on the Navy ship that was much faster than the old Republic we took overseas, U.S. Republic. And it took us about 32 days to go over. But coming back, we were on the edge of a typhoon.
Really?
Now, if you hold your hand up and point down like that,
mm-hmm.
that's how high the wave was.
Oh, my.
And that we'd see that wave coming, and I'm not kidding you, the boat would come over here, and it would raise up, and when it was at its top, it would look like that. See the bottom of it, through the hull.
Wow.
Our ship was supposed to take, say, for an example, 30 degree list to lean back and forth,
okay.
30 degrees, without turning over. It actually went 33 degrees.
Oh my.
And one day, about the third or fourth day out of Manila, when I got on the ship, I put my stuff in a bunk somewhere, and may sound odd, I was always cold.
Mm-hmm.
And in this ship, in this hole, they call it, a big room, we are stacked 7 high. I picked the tallest one because
really?
It would be the warmest.
I can imagine.
After I found up my stuff up there and the like, I went down and I went on deck, and a Navy guy was there on the railing. And I asked him, any guys from Montana on here? No, I don't, there isn't any. So I accepted it. I went on, and one day I went early to eat. Gail Lammers, who was with him there in the school with, the same class, was late for the Navy. They were 3 feet apart from me.
Really?
And found out we were on the ship.
That's
and
amazing.
He was a civil one, and I spent several evenings up on the signal deck, and of course there was no reason to be fearful of anyone of anything,
mm-hmm.
so he didn't have much to do. But on the other hand, when we went overseas, Bill Three Irons was on a detailed carry of cases of oranges up from one deck up to where the mess hall
mm-hmm.
was. And he had this box of oranges on his shoulders, and he bumped into a guy. I said, get out of the road, can't you see I got a load? It was his own brother, Victor.
Really?
Victor Crane. And we had, in our unit ourselves, we probably had in the neighborhood of about 10, 12, 15 Indian people, Cheyennes and Crows.
Mm-hmm.
And when we bumped into Victor, over in another part of the ship, there must have been close to 200 Montanans on that ship.
Wow.
And about half of them were Indians.
Wow.
So it's odd how you bump into people and literally you can find out where they are.
So after you got out of the military, what did you do?
Well, I got out and I looked around and there wasn't much. I got worked in the Sawyer grocery store for about a week and that ran out. I worked for the soil conservation there, leveling fields. So worked with them a little bit, surveying and fields and then they would come along with fraternals and so forth to level the fields out. And that ran out, and I had been decorating with the Ray School of Photography in Chicago, and to go back to Chicago and apply for film.
Did you go to
fall.
Photography school?
Yeah, in Ray School of Photography. Okay. And it's on Michigan Boulevard, 116 South Michigan, right across from the Art Institute, if you've ever been there.
I've never been to Chicago, no.
But at any rate, I was there, and we walked in, and they had us, were showing us around the school where we did the camera rooms and where we did the dark rooms and so forth. And I was in the dark room area, and there was Norman Meyer. He was in, and he did office work.
Really?
In our photographic unit.
Wow.
And he was one of our instructors.
Small world. Eventually you got married, I know that. You put that in your paper.
Yeah.
Have you had any children enter the military?
Did who?
Have you had any children who have entered the military?
No. I have three sons. The oldest boy is an electrical engineer, graduated from Bozeman, electrical engineer, and then he got a master's from the University of Michigan in computer programming.
Wow.
He worked for Bell Labs, Bell Telephone Labs, with labs for 3 or 4 years. And then he went out to California and he got a job out there. So, a company called Silicon Graphics, or no, it's a computer outfit. He was in Massachusetts, then they moved to California. That's how he got to California. And then he quit them and went to Silicon Graphics. And then he left Silicon Graphics and went to someone else. Or it became somebody else. And they went to another company, and then he's the fourth one now. Charles is 48 or 9 years old now. And
she waited later in life to have children.
Yeah. And Robert, the second boy, he's a music teacher in Park City. He graduated from MSU here.
When it was Eastern.
It was Eastern. My sister graduated from here when it was the Billings Normal School.
Right.
When it was just that faint one building and the gymnasium. But one thing happened about that gymnasium.
What?
Lodge grass. Bob Yellowtail's Diggs and Edgar Big Man and several other, I can't name them all. They beat every team in the state of Montana, right here in Montana.
Wow.
And, but they really had the best basketball team in the entire state. And that was probably 32 or 3. But
you said
my youngest boy, he's the smartest one, but he wants to do things his way, not the professor's way, and as a result, he went through about 3 years up at Bozeman, and then he dropped out. But don't ask him anything about physics, but he'll tell.
Really?
Chemistry, physics has always been the easiest subjects for me. And I did one thing as a freshman in high school. I processed a roll of film.
Yes.
I took pictures with my father's folding 3A postcard size camera. And he had a box about 10 inches long and 8 inches wide and about 8 inches high, and had a big apron inside of it. And in those days, you would unroll the film back to a little paper tab, if you remember. And it had like a gum envelope gumming on it. You lick that and stick it to the paper, roll it back up, put it in a place here, in a holder for it, and then fold a paper across over here and roll the paper over on this side. Then the other crank, you put it over here. Then you put the lid on and crank it through until you pulled it all in. Now you could open it up, and it uses what they call 3A developing powders. They were wrapped up in paper, not tin foil, but just paper. And I bought some of them from a guy by the name of Charlie Schneider there at Hardin. He had a card shop in the ice cream parlor there. And he, I got those there, and I mixed them up in the classroom and processed it. And before the class was done, I had it processed the pictures right in class with the equipment that was bought in 1910.
That's amazing. It's amazing. I worked in the photo lab for a while, just, you know, doing regular color processing. It's amazing how different all the photographs become.
I got a Boy Scout knife. And see that purple?
Yeah.
Look here. I can't scratch that.
Right.
But you know why?
Why?
How come I can cut it off now?
I don't know.
You know? Now, how many people would even attempt to do that?
Not many.
If that was plastic and so forth, I could cut the one layer of plastic off the other. I can take a colored photograph and cut the cyan layer down to the magenta. I cut the magenta down to the yellow.
Oh, pretty.
Now, cut the shape of a knife blade. Is it a real hard sharp like that?
No.
It goes down in a curve. And the thing is, when I put this blade like this, I'm on that curve.
You are.
And I can't cut nothing. Right. So I lift it, gradually lift it up, and then get to where I can cut. And you can cut as thin as you want.
I just have a couple of questions. It's kind of a general thing. What image from you being in the war sticks with you the most?
What image?
Yeah. When you think of the war, what do you think about? The first thing that pops into your mind.
Well, of all the varied things that I've seen in the world, I got the chance to see Australia and know the people and know the city of Brisbane. I learned there in Hollandia, I learned there the same way in the Philippines. And they have a language, they write it down, it's still Tagalog. It's pronounced Tagalog. And you would be Maganda Ilaga.
What does that mean?
Beautiful woman.
Well, thank you.
But that's, I'm a peculiar guy. I believe my whole life I have had a bad hearing. I got hearing aids in now. I can hear you pretty good, good. But if I take them out, I have a hard time hearing women's voices. Yeah. High-pitched voices.
Really? Some men may not say that's a gift.
High-pitched tones, they're just not there.
Really?
And as a result, I have missed out on something. I make a Asian bread. I always say focaccia, focaccia, and it isn't, it's focaccia. And there's certain phrases and words that I just don't hear. And maybe this is why I turned to photography, because it was something I could do myself, and I knew what I was doing.
Absolutely.
In my life. And back when I was about 15, I bought a book called The Photo Lab Index.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've ever seen one of them.
Yeah.
They're about that thick. And it had all the formulas for Kodak and DuPont, Agfa.
Yeah, Agfa's my favorite.
Ansco, and alike. Then they had a section in there on optics. Do you know how a depth of field scale works on a lens?
Not to talk about it, but I can figure it out when I'm playing with it, yeah.
Well, I calculated.
Oh, wow.
The depth of field scale for two lenses, 50 millimeter and a 6 3/4 postcard size camera. A rapid rectilinear lens. And first thing you have to do is find out the circle of confusion.
Right.
You know what circle of confusion is?
Mm-hmm.
It's where when you focus say a magnifying glass, you focus it. And we have three focal points for red, green, and blue light.
Okay.
Red is longer and blue is shorter, and green is down the middle. What the circle that those three would end up as, and that's what is known as the circle of confusion. And I calculated all by hand. It took two sides of a piece of typing paper to do all the calculations for one lens.
Wow.
So I had to find out circle confusion, by which I calculated out as 1/2000 of the focal length of the lens.
Okay.
And then I had to figure out the diameter of the lens.
And now today cameras just do that automatically.
Well, no, you still have to use a scale around your lens.
Right.
That has, say, 2, 3, 6, 8, 10, infinity and so forth. Well, at different points along here, now, then you have lens openings. So you determine what your lens, your focus points, I should say. Then these lens openings, you turn around. To that lens opening. So everything from 6 feet to infinity will be in focus, depending on that. Or 15 feet to infinity. And but I calculated that out.
Wow.
And I always say I was a poor math student.
Well, you know, when you apply it to something you really like, it makes sense. One last question. It's a very odd question, but our class came up with it. How do you feel about Hollywood's portrayal of World War II?
John Wayne, I remember Valerie Boys, I think it was. a bunch of guys supposedly from Brooklyn and the like, and they got in the Navy, and then Japanese plane stripped their ship, and here, beep, 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 right along, and this guy said, hey, the guy could get killed here. Well, everybody laughed at the line, but they had electrical fireworks that set off that created it. We laughed, we knew it was wrong, we accepted the story and not the practical, whether it being practical or not, or being exact.
How about one of the more, I don't know if you've seen one of the more current ones, Saving Private Ryan. Have you seen that one, movie?
Yes. They were a lot more realistic. But at the same token, they were, I felt they're very impractical.
Okay.
They wanted to show us something, and so they did. But it wasn't a, wouldn't happen normally in normal life. Now, one day we went to an automobile wreck 5 miles out of Hardin. And there's a guy sitting in the passenger side. The door was all jammed up and the like. And he said, oh my God. That's all he could say. We had to get him out of that car. And Roy Riley and his Ronald Ferguson were the other guys, but two of them got a hold of that door and stripped it off. I mean, it was so bangled anyway from the accident, and they pulled it, and it tore off the rest of it.
Really?
I mean, to see somebody in real life do that. In the movies, it's all pre-planned.
Right.
But to see it, those guys were strong.
Yeah.
And it took the two of them, and they're both well over 200 pounds and 6 foot tall. And,
right.
And they had to do it. I guess one of the things, I've always, that being the undertaker, I've found out how people died while eating. So to me it was normal. I mean, I never got indigestion from it or thought anything bad of it. But the but I found out at the dinner table what happened to a lot of people, and as I got older, I understood, and I even handled bodies and so forth. And in the 3.5 years I worked with them, he probably handled at least 300 to 400 bodies. When I worked the best product, the guy, we had a set of rollers that took product out to the front. And this one guy was dropping a piece of paper on this roller, and it started to go down, and he grabbed it. And the rollers grabbed his hand, and it rolled it up to here.
Oh, my.
And I heard him yell, and I went over there, and I asked them, can you reverse the bill? And they poked the right button and then reversed it. We rolled his hand back out. Oh, and he had moaning and groaning, and he wasn't moving his arm at all. And I looked at it. I said, you're okay. Just pinched a little, but didn't break any bones. I don't know how, but I can know and see and recognize a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
I've been around it so much.
Do you think that helped you in the war, being around?
Yes, it gave me a different attitude.
Your attitude seems to be very positive.
I just accepted it because it is one of those things.
But it was?
When I saw someone hurt somewhere, I knew what to do. I told about it and worked with Boy Scouts and everything else for years. And so I think I was just more prepared than a lot of people.
Yeah, for sure.
But some guy who's been protected all the time and never saw anybody with a broken arm or a real bad cut or something else, they probably sit back, oh, what's going for then? Pass out.
Yeah.
Most people don't do that. They work with it.
Mm-hmm.
And my own boys, I mean, I know when they're hurt, I know when they're not hurt, mm-hmm. I know when they're hollering, because they're more scared than it is anything else.
Yeah, I have three children, so.
So, right, three boys. Our family saying is, we have three boys, girls are no good.
And you look at
now we have two granddaughters, so we have to change.
Yeah, I have twin boys that are 8 months old, and I have this five-year-old little girl, too. So. Well, Lowell, this has been very interesting. Let's take